What is up, all you rowdy baseball fans? My name is Zach. I am your host here at the corner, and welcome to another episode. I want to thank y'all for your patience and what has been a unusually slow off season in terms of our content schedule. Usually this is the time of year that Chuck and I take to really kind of dive into some in the weeds stuff. However, with my schedule and my job with having me still overseas, that really hasn't lined up. Thankfully, today for you guys, we have a very jam-packed episode. Jeff Ellis of Locked On Guardians was nice enough to sit down with us. Y'all know Jeff, absolutely one of the best minds in Cleveland baseball, always willing to share his thoughts and sit down and talk guards. So this is really kind of a rapid-fire episode. There's a lot of good stuff in here. Jeff didn't have a lot of time, so a lot of this is really just trying to pick his brain as much as we could in the short time that we had. So a little shorter. Maybe for some of you guys, just a little bit more digestible over a short period of time. I know my mic sounds like crap. I'm not going to talk much longer. I am recording using AirPod Pros on a Windows PC, which if you are an audiophile like me, just does not line up. I made the mistake of not bringing my podcast kit out here. But hopefully here in a few weeks, I'll be back home and we'll be getting back to normal. So without further ado, y'all know what time it is. Let's go.
You're listening to At the Corner, a Cleveland Guardians podcast by Zach Caldwell and Chuck B.
Fastball hit in the air. A swing and a drive! Away back! Boom!
Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time again. Yes, we have been away for a while, but really, I've been away for a while. And I'm so glad that y'all are here to listen. I'm Zach. I'm your host for today. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Chuck. Chuck, say hello.
What's up, Zach? Good to hear your voice, buddy. We're getting close.
Yes, we are. Not
that close, but we're close.
Yes, we're close. And we're joined today for about a half an hour by Jeff Ellis. Jeff, say hello. Welcome.
Thanks for having me back on, guys. It's been a bit. I just have to say, having a super busy schedule, I appreciate both of you wedging me in there. I know I'm not the easiest one to nail down, so thank you for making that time.
Absolutely, man. My schedule has been all over the place too.
It's an honor to have you on, Jeff.
Yes, sir. If there's anybody that knows that, it's me, because I'm in a location that I'm not allowed to disclose, and my schedule is all over the place, so I feel that. But we have found time. We're going to make the time, and we're going to make the most of the time. So we're going to get straight into some stuff. Figured the best way to tackle this is just kind of talk about spring training as a whole. I'll let the conversation guide itself. So what are let's start with something that's been on my mind. This is something I genuinely want an answer to that I don't think any of us have. Where are we at as a fan base on Davison De Los Santos? He hasn't looked that good in spring training. Obviously, the small sample size rule applies. Are they serious about keeping this kid, 20-year-old, never seen any action over Double A on a 26-man roster spot? Is that where we're at, or are we looking at a potential Rule 5 return here?
You know, I wonder if they'll try to work out a deal. That's always the, you know, the behind the baseball part of it is, can they make some kind of trade? You know, the Rule 5 rules got slightly tweaked in the last CBA. So instead of it being like 50,000 per player and then 5,000 back, it's now 100,000 with 50,000 back. So it is, I mean, $50,000 to most of us is a lot of money. To a baseball team, it's relatively small. So they got a chance to see a kid who was awesome after some swing adjustments, but you know, he had an under 3% walk rate, even post those swing adjustments. So it felt like a bit of an uphill battle. It really feels like it's going to be hard to keep him when you also have to keep like Floreal and some of the other pieces on the roster. So if there isn't a trade, my gut feeling right now is he does not make it because there's just less flexibility with him compared to someone like Floreal. And Floreal has to make the team. He's out of options. So he's essentially in the same situation. But you gave up Cody Morris, who is worth more than 50K. I know not everyone is a Cody Morris fan, but I think he is worth more than 50K if you're ranking assets. So I think you totally see if there's maybe some pitching depth that can allow you to keep Davison and stash him away. Arizona could definitely, I mean, they were put together with bubble gum and duct tape with that bullpen last year. It was like most of that bullpen hadn't been together more than a month. So maybe you can figure out something there with a lesser piece. But if you can't, I that's my view.
All right. So Justin, today we got some weird news about Gavin Williams. You're not worried yet, right? Jeff, I'm sorry.
Oh, I mean, whenever they say elbow, I have at least 50% worry. Like that's just anytime it's a pitcher and it's elbow, I'm not going to like freak out yet. I'm not going to just take the sky is falling approach. It's very easy to fall into that, but I am slightly concerned right now about that. We've been getting, so, you know, when we have the podcast, like we do, we get a lot of unsolicited information, and if we can't track it down, we don't run with it because we don't want to be lied to, or we don't want, you know, and even when it's a good source, like it's not like these are just random people. It's like people related to players, people related to the org. We haven't gotten anything on Williams. So if you want to look on the positive note of it, like this is not one where it feels like there's always someone who wants to tell us when someone else is hurt. We have not had any of that yet. So I think there is a degree of, this is just the abundance of caution, which with as good as Williams has looked, he's, you know, I joke about every year, there's the Casey Kochman LASIK surgery story. There's always a story that is not true, that is overblown. You know, spring training is spring training. But the Gavin Williams adjustments ones, I think, are real. Like, I don't think that's the false story in the story this year. I think he has made some adjustments. I think he was already a fantastic prospect.
You were worried about him a little bit health-wise going into the draft, I remember, a little
bit. He had some back issues his first few years at ECU that caused some teams to move him down their boards or were a little bit more afraid to engage with him. So there was always that health concern that was in the back of my mind. And that's why, like, a year ago at this time, I had Tanner Bibee as the number one prospect, just because, like, Espino had the highest ceiling but also had the greatest injury risk. Then Williams also probably has a higher ceiling than Bibee. One can really debate that, but I also had some injury history, and it's like Bibee was just clean. So that's why with any pitcher, I feel like it doesn't matter the pitcher, you're always concerned, and arms are blowing out at, you know, guys having their second or third surgery, missing like 2 to 3 years. Sometimes it feels like you get surgeries back to back, and it's always a concern, but those were more back related. Not that back doesn't affect everything in your body, but like I said, I'm going to hold out hope, and I'm going to say that, like, no one has reached out to say I am hearing this. So I'm going to say this is just, he tweaked something. It felt weird. You know, we've all laid wrong on our elbow and been like, like, what's going on here? And especially with him being like 22, maybe he has never actually had that moment yet. Maybe he's never had the random muscle pain because he's too young to have experienced it. So I'm going to hold out hope was just that he got one of those like things that when you're in your early 20s, the first time, you know, it's like the first time you have heartburn in your early 20s and you're half afraid you're having a heart attack. So I'm just hoping this is the equivalent of that. I would always go over abundance of caution though, with these young arms.
Absolutely. All right, I think that's fair.
Let's talk Manzardo. Very exciting. Probably he's probably the best prospect in the system outside of the water.
And he's going to sit in Columbus until May.
What's your take? Jeff, you don't think he's going to make it opening day and they'll just, he needs to work on his defense and then they'll try to hold him down until maybe May-ish or early June? How do you see this playing out?
I want him up and I think he could handle it. I will say, like, in fairness to them, like, this isn't quite as terrible as some other choices that could be made about holding a guy down because he had an up and down year last year. He dealt with injuries. This isn't me speaking out of you know, things aren't to be talked about. There's a whole article written about it in the Washington Times. Like, his mom is dealing with a life-threatening illness. He's a guy who's got a lot of things on his plate and it did affect him. And he was doing swing change to try to tap into his power. So you look at all those things combined, that's why the numbers were down. He had a lot going on. So if one wanted to make an argument and say, hey, you know, the numbers were down, we just want to get more reps, I can see that argument. At the same time, Josh Naylor, I love him to death, but the injury risk has always been there. Like, I want to put that guy at DH just to keep him in as many games as possible, like the less stress I can. And if you don't put Manzardo at first base, like, who are we discussing there? Like, are we talking Florial, who had some time in the Yankee system, I believe, at first base? Are we talking Devison? It's like, I mean, I kind of like JD Davis a little. I was kind of looking at his numbers, but I don't think they're going to claim him. It's, you know, last year was the first year he didn't hit lefties. If you look at that, he actually hit righties above league average. If he bounces back in that way, he's an above average guy. But it's like outside of, like, unless you make that choice to add someone like Davis, Manzardo's the best option you got. So run with it. Maybe you get lucky and it's a bad rookie year and you get a draft pick for it. One can make the same argument with Rocchio. It's like both those guys still qualify and both could earn you a draft pick. So if you want to run with those guys, you know, why not? And the only downside is if, you know, they finish second in the ranking. Well, no matter what, like it's a thing, right? Because Tanner didn't qualify for a draft pick, but he got a full year of service time anyway. So if a guy comes up and he's great, you might end up losing. What's the point in playing that game?
Yeah.
Yep, I agree. So let's move on. Another prospect we're talking about in the same conversation as Manzardo, who's had an excellent spring. Chase DeLauder, he looks to be, at least as far as, you know, we can tell, he looks to be the real deal. Massive speculation on a national media level that there is a opportunity that he makes the team, which I know that you do not believe the team would do. However, do you think that having him break camp with the team, I mean, is it a situation where it puts them in the best situation to win? I mean, Florial has looked terrible. Like, I don't know if I want Esteban Florial out there in the lineup 4 days a week. And who are you pairing him with in tandem? Miles Straw?
I mean, based right now, like, I think if you liked Florial enough to give up Cody Morris, who, let's be honest, if he was here, he'd make this team in the pen with some of their injury issues. Like, you gave up a sure pen arm. Like, Florial's should make this team if you believed in him that much. Like, spring shouldn't throw you off. That being said, I feel like right now your outfield has to be Quan, Freeman, and Brennan to start based on what we've seen. The reason I don't believe in Chase DeLauder is I'm not always good at finding information, and I asked people, like, help me find it. The only player who went from A ball to the majors and played in less than 10 double A games is Juan Soto. And if I expand that to 20 games, it's Nolan Schnell from last year. And DeLauder has had health issues galore. If we count the AFL, which most people wouldn't, if we count the Cape Cod, which a lot of people wouldn't, he's played 200 games the last 4 years, and he has not faced a preponderance. And that's, you know, he's averaging 50 games a season with those. If we remove both the AFL and the Cape, he's played 123 games over the last 4 years. So he's a guy, and a lot of that at James Madison is not the best level of competition. He was kind of infamous for his current teammate, Parker Mezick. I was like, Mezick's last start was just making DeLauder's day miserable. Or it wasn't Mezick's last start, I'm sorry. It was one of DeLauder's last before he got hurt. And he's played at a lower level. He has not faced velocity. He hasn't faced a lot of plus secondary stuff. He hasn't in camp. He's still facing a lot of lesser guys. I think he's fantastic. I think the future could be as soon as this year. I don't see him in that situation. And I know nobody wants to talk about 40 man stuff, but they're probably going to add a pitcher or two to the 40 man. So then you're adding the ladder as well. And you're talking about cutting three guys from this roster. They already sent down Espino, who's like the one guy they could have put on the 60-day disabled list. So it's hard to navigate. It's why they should have made a trade, at least a minor one by now, to clear some of these infielders. They have not. But I think with DeLauder, you want to see some reps in AA. You want to let him get used to velocity and secondary offerings against a weaker level of pitching rather than just throw him to the Sharks.
That's fair.
All right. Now,
do you think he could push the issue? Like, do you think there's a way that he could make them push the issue? Like, he's tearing it up. He's having a crazy spring at AA. You know, he's been there for a month. They move him up to Columbus. He's absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. Do you think that's a possibility? Like, because there comes a point where it's like, it's all like, yeah, you could look at this guy for 2025, but if he's, you know, if it comes Memorial Day and he's batting 350, you know, kind of like Brennan was last year, where Brennan or Brennan the year before was tearing it up.
Yeah. No, it was, I was trying to think, like, when, you know, maybe not the comp everyone wants, but Owen White, right? Or Did I get it right? I get that. Like, not no. Owen White's the pitcher. Owen Miller is the infielder. Yeah. I get my Owen's confused. Owen Miller. But you know, like 2 years ago, he was tearing it up a lot, and he got that call up when he was hitting like 400. I mean, I think DeLotter could play this year in the big leagues. I just think you want to see him get that experience, get another set of games against. Make sure you know there are still people who doubt if he's going to catch up to velocity with his swing. That there's some cheating in his swing that he's can get away with so far. So I think he's going to be fine. I'm not saying that's me. I thought he was the number two prospect in system, but that's because I am just really high on Manzardo. Like really, really, I fully, like, I think Manzardo is almost can't miss. I know I shouldn't say that because now I've just doomed him to a life of failure, but I think he's close to that level. And DeLotter has a little bit of risk, and I always kind of weigh that. So I think he could totally end up playing with the team before the end of the year. It could be even as early as something like June or July. It could be late in the year, but if, you know, if Brennan doesn't work out, if Valera continues to get hurt as he has always done, if, you know, Freeman doesn't work in center field, if they have another year like last year, where basically everyone fell flat on their face in that outfield and DeLotter is performing, I don't see how he doesn't get a rep, because if everyone's failing, this team isn't going to be contending. If we're being honest, if the entire outfield has a repeat of last year, where, you know, even Kwan was a little bit of a slow starter last year. He ended up being fine. He is the one guy you can count on out there. But if they have another one of those situations, they're not, I mean, this division's bad, but they need someone to step up. And if no one steps up, I think there's a logic to going to DeLotter, especially because by then you should know, hey, we can cut a bunch of these outfielders and we can try to get, like, if Brendan doesn't perform this year, then you're not feeling as bad about trying to get him through waivers. If Floreal doesn't show anything, it's the same thing. At some point, Valera, you're like, well, the guy can't stay healthy. So if those options fail, I see DeLotter as a guy who can help.
Let's talk Juan Brito. I agreed with what you said the other day. I always thought there's a chance he's the DH more than the full-time second baseman. Where are you on how soon we're going to see him up, and how do you see it working out defensively?
You know, I think he'll be okay at second. It's not a high bar, if we're being honest. It's you don't have to do a whole ton there. And there's also a world where, you know, he can maybe get some reps and move into left field, and you flip Kwan into center, and yeah, you're going to lose some of that elite defensive in left with that. He's a hitter first, though, and that's always like maybe DH is the future. Because if everyone works out, like I said, if you hit a world where Roque or Arias takes over and is fine as your shortstop, and then you got
maybe Andres Angel Martinez.
Yeah, you know, maybe eventually it's Angel Martinez, but whoever it is there, it's like Brito's bat, I feel like, plays. And it's just about finding the spot where he can go. It's not necessarily a high ceiling one. And, you know, I think there's a world where they still win that trade. I think it's going to be hard. And I do think Nolan Jones is going to be a solid regular. I will, again, caution anyone who listens to our show. It's like he had a 400 BABIP last year. No one has a 400 BABIP. You know, Luis Arraez is the king of BABIP, or Freddie Freeman. And theirs are in the 330s, 340 ranges. So don't just naturally assume that this is a boff trade. Like, give the kid a chance to prove himself. I think he'll hit at the big league level.
Absolutely. Speaking of Angel Martinez, what, like, I don't think any of us could have possibly predicted that he would have the spring that he's had. I know that Willie never really moved him down. He had kind of an off year last year, but it looks like whatever tweaks and mechanics changes that he worked on in the off season have fared very well for him. And his ceiling is still kind of high, which leads to again, what the heck are we doing with the middle infielder situation? Because that logjam is just getting, like, you'd think it would get less and less complicated as we, like, sort through people. You know, they're trying to figure out if Arias is the guy. Arias hasn't had a great spring. He had a terrible winter ball, but take winter ball with a grain of salt. That doesn't really mean anything. Like, if Arias is not it, do you move on to Roqueo? Again, the question of where is Brito? Can Brito play second base? Does Jimenez move back to short? Is Angel Martinez moving up the organization's ladder in terms of priority and guys that they think could be the answer? Like, this just, we always, I feel like, instead of, like, getting answers, like, this was one of the timeline things I was trying to pay attention to in spring training. I have more questions now than I did before spring training started.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel like he can't play shortstop long-term. Like, if I'm being honest, that that was kind of one of the big knocks a year ago. Like when everyone was still positive, most people thought he might that the few, like I remember talking with Justin on our podcast, I thought the future infield combo was Andres at short and Angel at second. It was a rough year. Diving into the statistics, it was an extra rough year. I did the Prospects Live write-up on him, and that really even made me want to drop him a little bit more because across the board, he had regression almost completely. And it wasn't like when we saw Bo Naylor, who was like the last guy we saw that regression with, where there was health parts of it. In this case, it was just like he, I don't know if I want to say full-on repeated, but close to repeated level and was worse. And he's been great in spring. And I'll be very curious to see how he moves that into this season in the minors. I do think, you know, he's definitely a guy who is going to go down and has a chance to prove himself down there and show that, you know, it's not just, you know, 2 months of spring that he can maintain this. Because that's the thing. Like a lot of spring performance just gets completely thrown out the window by orgs when you talk to them. It's like they're looking for very specific traits. They might even have a guy working on something very specifically to the point where they don't care about these other points. Like, okay, like you're not going to like work on your patience, do other bits and pieces with it. So I do think there, you know, he's going to, I don't think he has any shot of making the team, even though he's on the 40 man. They just have so many other guys got to work through. But he could be one of those guys that I assume he'll be the shortstop with Brito, the second baseman in AAA to start the year. And you know, we'll see what happens with Gabby. We'll see what happens with Rocchio. But those, as you talked about, that's that logjam. Like both those guys should have had opportunities before now, but we were stuck with Ahmed. And I know he was beloved, but he was just, you know, he was more of a platoon bat that we were playing as a starter.
Quickly on this topic, it just feels like in all this, Rocchio gets overlooked. Yes, he had a bad second half, no doubt about it, when he got called up, but how do you see this playing out for him? And is there any chance that Arias and Rocchio make the opening day roster together?
I think there could be a world if Rocchio is a starter. I think Rocchio is not the starter. He goes down because Arias has a bit more of multi-positional value. He's had that experience playing around. But if you have, it's kind of almost one of my faults with Cleveland system. Like I like they're trying Tyler Freeman at center field. I don't understand why we didn't do this 3 years ago. It's with Rocchio. It's like, I like, you know, it's like they called him up and put him at third and he never really played there. It's like, guys, I understand you want them to focus on the position they're going to play, but building in positional flexibility, I really think specifically because we keep putting guys in positions they've never performed in, is an important thing. Yeah. And they should be focusing on this a little earlier. So I feel like if they both make it, then Rocchio's the starter. He's a very good prospect still. It's just there's the problem with the Rocchios and the Martinez's and a lot of their kind of prospects is they spend a lot of time acquiring guys who are like 50s or 55s at best. It's just very low ceiling. There's not like a 60 or 65 outcome, at least in my opinion. It could be very wrong, where a guy is, you know, a plus player relative to the league. They're shooting for average to above average and just not taking that risk. And I think that's kind of the, I don't want to say the problem, but then you have a lot of guys who are kind of similar and they got to keep giving them opportunities, but then they're not trying them at places to find those opportunities.
I know we're close for time, but I just want to, who do you think that's flying under the radar in the system that can be a contributor this year? You know, I outside of Cantil, I really like Will Dion. But who do you think can contribute this year that's really under the radar?
Dion's a guy we're all looking forward to is his Savant data, because he should not be as successful as he is with the fastball as light as it is. He has probably the best success with the, I don't want to say the worst fastball, but like fastball to success ratio is, it doesn't make any sense. So I'm curious to see if like he has just massive spin or what's going on with that pitch. I think Ryan Webb is someone to watch. We saw it in the AFL where he just missed a ton of bats. He is someone who they're going to have to add to the 40 man, I believe, at the end of this year. He's just been hurt a lot. He got hurt at Georgia. He's been hurt in their minors, hasn't had those opportunities. Another fun lefty, I think, led the AFL in strikeouts, if I'm right, which is a hitter's paradise league. So it's nice to see a guy go there and perform well. So Webb is kind of that guy for me. Hitting wise, you know, I think a guy I want to see is Rafael Ramirez. I think he'll be in low A this year, but he's one of those guys with some big tools For as much as we talk about low ceiling types, that is not him. So that's a guy, if you kind of want to see some more of a high ceiling type, who will be in the lower minors this year.
I think for me, I'll just throw out two names real quick that I think could be a help. I think both Dion Frias and Alexis Planez have potential to be in that same category. I think that their floor is pretty low. They're guys that may strike out a little more than you like, but I think if they can figure it out and be consistent at the plate, I think their ceiling is definitely high enough to warrant a look. Chuck, I know you have some draft questions.
I'm about to go crazy about the draft. But you know who disappeared this spring? Jonathan Rodriguez. I feel like he really ended the season really well in terms of his stock, and he kind of just disappeared over the winter and the spring. Jeff, what do you make of him? I know he has the Oscar Gonzalez deal to him, which is probably what they think of him. But Jeff, anything on him? I feel like he's just disappeared.
He's got a heck of an arm. He played really well last year. Defensively, he's been kind of a mess. I don't know if it's too much pressure. They don't have a lot of righties, so he'll get an opportunity. But, right now it looks like he's ticketed to AAA. I mean, he won the Triple Crown in terms of the internal stats for the minors last year. So he'll get another chance to prove. Former third-round pick, so they did invest a lot of value in him. But, yeah, he feels like a guy who's kind of just waiting for that opportunity.
All right, but I just wanted to go back to your point on Ryan Webb, Jeff. Is there any chance that he can be the next Sam Henches out of the bullpen? We're really thin on lefty arms for the bullpen. Do you think that's a possibility? Or do I want to keep him as a starter?
I mean, it's always possible with a lefty. You never know what's going to go wrong in terms of any pitcher development or right. He definitely has a good pitch mix to accomplish that, so I think there's some of that. The draft question you were going to ask. Just got to make sure before I bounce out of here that I give you that one.
I'm about to go crazy. So all Guardians fans are getting into college baseball this year. That's how it's going. But you are – I swear by you and Willie Hood's work every year. I follow everything you guys type about the draft, and I can't wait. All right, so if outside – going into the year, it was Travis Bezanna for you. But is anybody, Charlie Condon, Zach, I'm going to really impress you with my baseball, college baseball knowledge here. Charlie Condon has been incredible. There was that piece about Bezanna's versus breaking balls that you were a little worried about. Is Charlie Condon made a push? Jack Caglione? If it wasn't Travis Bezanna, who would you take 1-1?
Chase Burns, for me.
Ooh. Jeff, were you?
It's hard to say. I will say the thing with Condon is he was not great in the Cape, and we know how much they value it. And I'll give this caveat. He hasn't faced anyone except for Georgia Tech. And that Georgia Tech weekend, the first two games, he was completely shut down. So I am curious to see him face good competition. That is always the danger with college, is until we get into the play, the meat of conference play, it's often weaker opponents. And he's been utterly fantastic. Right now, I do, in spite of saying that, I probably lean Condon, even with the bad Cape and having faced weaker competition, because he's playing all over. He's not just a first baseman. Georgia's doing him. But I will say the players who have come out of Georgia have almost universally fallen flat on their face. So that does make me a little nervous overall. But it's probably right now for me, it's Condon or probably Burns. Those are the guys who are actually stepping up and stepping in.
I'm a big Chase Burns guy, just because I always worry about hitters, depending on what school they come from, flattening, and Cleveland can take a great pitcher and make them even better. But that's just me.
But just a follow up, Jeff, where are you on Hagen Smith and Jack Caglione? You had a really interesting take that he's a better pitcher than he is hitter right now, Caglione, or that's how you would go for it. Where are you on Hagen Smith and Caglione? And yeah, Willie Hood's guy, Chase Connor Griffin.
Griffin, I'll say you can't use anything he's doing right now because Mississippi baseball is not good. The history of Mississippi baseball is terrible. You have to look at what he did over the summer, facing better competition. Hagen Smith, solid. He's more of a two pitch guy. Is my only concern. I think he's still in the top 10 range. I like Jack a lot. He's another guy, again, I want to just see reps. I do think he's one of the top 10 pitchers in this class because the stuff is really good, but he's not maintaining it beyond five innings, which could just be, he's only had two starts. So we'll have to see his swing and miss. I still see him expand the zone. But yeah, that's kind of my quick thoughts on them. I hate to do it to you guys. I really have to run.
No problem, Jeff. You were tremendous.
Doing my other one. So thank you. Honor, sorry Jeff. Again about time.
All good, Jeff.
Oh, it's my honor to be here. Thank you so much.
Hey, real quick, tell us where to find you on Locked On Guardians.
You can my Twitter. I'm intermittently at it's at Jeff MLB Draft at Locked Guards. I believe is the Twitter for our account, and then you can just type Locked On Guardians. You'll find us on YouTube, or wherever you get podcasts, and we do 5 days a week if you want more Guardians coverage.
Right on, y'all. Thank you, Jeff, the man himself. Some of the best baseball Guardians content, Mr. Jeff Ellister. Thank you for your time. We'll have more throughout the season with you.
Yes.
Go forth and be merry. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Jeff.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jeff Ellis.
That was fast, impactful. That was like the fastest episode we've ever done, but like it was so impactful. So much.
It was definitely like that's probably one of the more intense, like lightning round type style interviews that we've done.
I am all in on college baseball. Zach, you'd be shocked about my college baseball intake. I'm like I'm all in on college baseball. You know me, I'm not the biggest numbers guy. I try like so hard to like be a numbers guy, but I'm not. So I'm really just trying to watch as much tape as I can. But yeah, it's interesting that you said Chase Burns. There's nothing like a full-blown ace on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
That comes through your system. There's just not, and there's just nothing like that. Like a game one playoff pitcher, like it just, you know, that's under it. It just, it changes everything. It really does.
And that's why I think that they're, you'd be foolish as a Guardians fan if you did not legitimately consider the fact that they are looking at Chase Burns as a guy that they could take and go, hey, we develop pitching really well. We taught Tanner Bibee how to take his fastball from 90 miles an hour and throw almost 100. Imagine what you can do with a guy that's already arguably, and this is nothing against Tanner because Tanner is excellent. I think you could argue that Chase Burns is on the level that Paul Skeens was last year. He has taken the college worldwide storm. What a blessing it is as a team to have 1.1 in the draft and have a practical smorgasbord of options to pick from that could fit whatever need you want to address.
It's going to be really amazing how it plays out. Like Charlie Condon, he just strikes me as like that middle of the order bat, power, big boy, like just, you know, he's a middle of the order, no doubt about it, bat. It's going to be
true, like 5-6 hitter.
But Willie Hood, he's the man, as we both know. He's really high on Connor Griffin, the high school center fielder. So it's going to be really interesting how it plays out. I love Hagen Smith because it's really cool to see like a power lefty with a whack slider. That's going to be fun to see. But yeah, I'm leaning towards Charlie Condon right now.
If we're talking about lefties, Travis Bazzana has been fun to watch too. No matter his struggles against off-speed and breaking pitches, when he gets to the ball, it goes a long way.
So I love Travis Bazzana. I'm like trying to watch as much as I can on him. Do you worry though that his ceiling isn't like? I just feel like Charlie Condon has a higher ceiling in terms of like power and position.
It's hard to say just because like college baseball. So one of the things, and full caveat to any of you listening, I've had an extremely hard time keeping up on the current college baseball season out here because ESPN does not work out here, even with a VPN. I've tried it. So I'm having to get all of my information like as it happens from either Twitter or stats pages. Like I haven't been really able to watch the games. The competition level in college baseball varies exponentially. So in the SEC, where Charlie Condon plays, you pretty much Vandy and Tennessee are your only teams that are going to offer you legit competition.
I agree with that, but I think you made a great point about Chase Burns. There's really nothing like that ace, but I feel like Daniel Espino, if he's healthy, just opens a whole new world and a universe for Guardians fans. But you can't depend on it. You have no idea how that's going to play out.
And that's my argument for Chase Burns. So I don't envy any of the scouts or Chris Antonetti or Mark Shapiro as they get closer to the draft because they're going to be watching these guys through the college baseball season. They've got a pretty tough task to figure out how they want to spend this draft pick because, one, the first pick in a draft doesn't come along all that often. But like I just said, it's also not very often that you have arguably – you can pick one of three options that fit whatever organizational need you want to meet. It just depends on what they want to prioritize. If I'm the Guardians, if I'm the Guardians, if it's me, and this is just me as a fan looking at objectively at what the Guardians do best, I'm taking Chase Burns because they develop pitching. They know how to keep pitchers healthy in the minors. They know how to get them up to speed to pitch at the major league level and be very good for a very long time.
Does it feel like our pitching depth isn't as great as it once was because we had so many like graduates in the minors like Gavin Williams, Logan Allen, yep. Tanner Bibee?
Well, I don't know, like, you're like hurting.
Daniel, there's Daniel Espino, there's Cantillo, then what? You know, then it's like,
well, Justin Campbell is going to miss his second pro season.
I worry that our pitching depth isn't what it was. But all, but before we head out, can I rant on something that pissed me off?
Absolutely.
So I go.
We need to bring back the chuck off section.
Yeah. So when during in the winter, MLB released this thing. We're going to do the spring breakout game, where we put all the prospects from the organization, and put them in a game. I got so excited about it. This is great. Baseball stepping up. Who would have thought? But who's the idiot that decided to not put a broadcast on it? It's not even going to be on television. Are you kidding me? What the hell are you doing?
But they'll broadcast the Futures game on All-Star Weekend, which is basically the same thing.
But Zach, what's the point? You're killing the fun out of all this. You're not going to broadcast the spring breakout game. What's the point of doing it?
Absolutely, they did. And I'll caveat on top of that. I'll add on to it. I think it's a shame that more teams don't broadcast their team's spring training games because.
Oh, that's another thing. We didn't have the game for like 4 days. 4 days.
We haven't had the game for almost a week. And we've had I think the two games that we did have, we had to watch the opposing team's broadcast. We haven't had a volley broadcast in almost a week. Why would broadcast these games? Let people see these young players.
No, but Zach, I'm so disappointed. You're underselling it. They made it a thing. They put it out like a whole press release. We're doing the spring breakout game with the top prospects, 80 prospects out of the top 100. Then they put the prospects to the. They're not even put it on TV. They can't put it on MLB Network. They couldn't figure it out.
Here's the thing. Even if they put it on MLB Network, the majority of the country wouldn't be able to watch it.
It's ridiculous.
It is. And even if they put it on MLB Network right now, half of the country wouldn't be able to watch it because everybody that uses YouTube TV and Sling doesn't have MLB Network right now, and they haven't for over a year.
Why does Rob Manfred hate baseball? It really bothers me. No, but like, Zach, they ruined the fun out of all of it.
It was an insane announcement and immediately crushed. It was an insane announcement immediately crushed by the fact that none of us can watch the game. It's like, what are we going to get out of this? A box score?
It ruined the whole thing.
No, dude, you're good. That you make an excellent point. Like baseball as a whole, like at least on the league level, continues to shoot itself in the foot.
From the start, I knew they screwed it up. They did something great. They got ahead of it, and then they just screwed. They dropped the ball completely.
Just chuck the
whole
thing.
There was no point in doing this thing if there's no way to broadcast it.
It's like you're gonna tell me you couldn't get an FS1 broadcast on a Saturday afternoon after football season is over.
Just get it on anywhere, but you couldn't get anything. It's ridiculous.
But that's the thing is that they didn't even try, and that's just how you know they didn't even try.
Is it just the guard? I hope they're putting on they'll probably put on Jackson Holliday and the Orioles on TV. I hope. Is it just the Guardians, or is it like nobody's getting broadcasted?
Well, so at least for the breakout game, nobody's getting broadcasted. The list of national
broadcasts. What's the
point of
it then? It makes no sense to me.
Well, and like the thing is, you got the number one prospect in baseball
advertising our young players. What was the point of this?
Well, and that's the thing is like I think that's one of the most exciting things about baseball, like. I've always been a prospects guy. You can ask my dad. I've always known who the prospects were in Cleveland. Yeah, because you want to watch these young kids come up and realize their dream of playing in the majors. And it is a proven fact. I think young players play the game with a different energy because they don't have that veteran season yet. They think they're invincible. They know every game is winnable and they play like it. And if you're not promoting that as baseball with a sport
They're
that
not promoting the youth. They're not promoting
no.
the, they're not promoting their product. It's bad,
No, you want to know what
bad
they are
luck.
promoting? The five major large market teams. That's what we're
No,
going to
but
get
it's a
shoved
it,
down our throats all
no,
year.
but it's a Zach, it's a bad look. You made this big great thing of it, and then they completely dropped the ball. It's a bad look, Zach. I'm really upset about it. Really
I
annoyed.
agree. I agree
Bullshit.
110%, buddy. Yeah,
All
it
right, that's
is.
it for me. I got it out of me. Now I'm done for the night.
All right, so let's wrap up with three fast facts. I'll call this three fast facts. So this can be three things. It could be anything. Things you're looking for in the rest of spring training. Yep,
Okay.
three fast facts. So this could be observations you've made, things you're looking forward to, things you want to see for the rest of spring training. So give me three of them.
I want to see Tristan McKenzie end spring training healthy.
That's a good one.
I want to see more reps of Tyler Freeman in center field.
I definitely think we're going to see that.
And I would like to know, actually, I want to see more of Cade Smith. He looked and Franco Alamon, they look great.
Yeah, Cade Smith looked pretty good. So my three are, I want to see Bo Naylor get a little bit more playing time in the lineup after that back injury that he had. It's got me a little freaked out. Maybe they're just being a little cautious, kind of like Jeff said, it's spring. There's no reason to rush anybody, especially with a long
What's going
season
on
coming
with
up.
Karinchak? I haven't heard a thing about him.
I
I
haven't
know
heard a peep.
he had shoulder tightness, but that was like the first day. We haven't heard anything since. We haven't gotten an update.
Nope.
Weird.
So Bo Naylor, you make a good point about Karinchak. I personally don't care about him because I think he's a liability, but it will be interesting to see if he does
Oh,
get any
it's
reps
weird.
later in the spring.
We haven't heard a peep about it.
Yeah, and the organization has been kind of uncannily quiet about things that guys are dealing with, which that's normal for the Guardians. They're normally pretty quiet. I would like to see, let's see, so Bo Naylor, I would like to see as much of Davis and De Los Santos and Kyle Manzardo as possible in starting lineups because they deem to be
Yeah.
seeing better pitching. So there's really no point and bringing Manzardo in late in the game versus a lot of teams' tier two and tier three pitching. I think Manzardo is a fantastic bat, but one thing that I think he's the best at, even better than Stephen Kwan, I think he is the best in the organization at pitch recognition. The dude is going to be a walk machine. He's not going to swing at bad pitches. And I think you need to be able to see that against better pitching. So I look hopefully for him to be in the starting lineup with a couple of these spring games that are left before we get to opening day. And then number three, I want to see good remaining starts, probably only one apiece from Beebs and Sticks. I think if you can get those, you can be confident about their health going forward. It's a good sign that Tristan McKenzie was reported to have a regular offseason, whatever that means in terms of his workout plan. So let's hope that they got him healthy, that they got him rested. And because, like you said, God knows our pitching depth is going to be tested almost immediately if either of those guys
And
flounder
obviously, we hope
health-wise.
Gavin Williams is okay, or else I'm gonna
Yep,
find the
I'm not
nearest window out of my
panicking.
apartment.
I'm not panicking on Williams yet. Gavin's a big boy. He's what, 6'3"? Like 6'3", 225. Like he's a big dude. So gotta make sure that they're teaching him how to control his weight, how to. And that's not me calling him fat, like how to control his body to best use it for pitching to keep him healthy, because you can see big guys get hurt pitching pretty easily. So that's for me. And yeah, this was a fun.
This Tyler Freeman thing is interesting. Yeah, he's playing more center field than he's not even sniffing the infield at this point. It's very interesting.
I will say this, he does not look comfortable playing center field. He looks better in the
That's
last like
okay.
two
If they,
games.
you need reps. That's okay. It's gonna happen.
Yeah.
I
I
don't know
mean,
why they decided it's now.
he's not Miles Straw defensively, but also the same thing, like, I guess Miles allegedly spent most of the offseason in the weight room trying to put on some weight to be better at the plate. I
I'm
think
just so burnt out. I just think no matter what he does, we're all just burnt out from watching
well,
him hit.
I think
It's
the organization's burnt out on
so
him too.
bad. Yeah.
The fact that Tyler Freeman is seeing reps in center field for a guy who has never played center field before is pretty telling.
Yeah.
Like we all say not to overanalyze stuff in spring training. That's the stuff you want to pay attention to. Who's playing out of position? Who's getting consistent reps out of position? And Tyler Freeman getting reps in center field is a good thing. Cause like Jeff said, you know, you build positional diversity. You know, Tyler Freeman is a guy that can play third. He can play short. He can play second. And now he can play center field. Like that's a guy you want on your bench or even in your starting lineup because his hit tool is a plus, like Jeff was talking about. I meant to clarify when Jeff was on, for any of you who don't know, when Jeff was talking about the 55 thing, he's talking about scout ratings. So 55 is considered league average, and then anything above that is considered above average. So you hear 60, 65, 70, 75, 80 potential in guys, or any of the actual 60, 65, 70, 75, and 80. Those are all guys that are well above average, and they're bats that you want to play. Tyler Freeman's hit tool is a 60 with an upside of 65. Pretty good. You want that in your lineup.
He always could hit. He hit every single level.
Always did. And then his debut got set back by his shoulder surgery.
I'm still so angry that Major League Baseball decided to not broadcast our spring breakout. Just ridiculous.
I know, dude. Especially when you got guys like Jackson Holliday and Chase DeLauder in there and just so it's much like good young talent.
Is there even a radio broadcast? I don't even want to know. I'm so upset. I'm sorry. I can't even. I don't want to talk about it.
You don't want to know the answer.
It ruined the whole thing for me. It's terrible. All right. I'll see you later, Zach. Great. This was awesome.
Yeah, this was a good one. This was a good quick one. We'll try to be more consistent, getting closer to the start of the season.
We'll be doing it every week during the season.
Yep, and I will be home the first full week of April. So I'm going to start getting a little more consistent. But you guys know the deal for now. I'm going to fade to the outro music. That's a song by Electronomia. If you like it, you can find it in the description. Thank you as always.
Is this a new thing? We're fading out the music?
Not in this. I edited it in the software.
Oh, I don't even hear that. Okay. All right.